Welcome back. We're talking about some very exotic technology that can change the weather. We're talking with Scott Stevens, an award-winning television weatherman. And Scott, just before the break, you dropped something that I wasn't expecting. You suggested that this exotic technology was used to bring down one or other of the space shuttles.
Yeah, there's other wars that are happening that we're clueless about.
Well, tell us about this
Clueless about.
incident. Tell us about this.
Well, it goes back to Columbia first, back in 1986. And I have no other further information about this other than that there were Soviet ships 60, 70, 80 miles off of Cape Canaveral that they had to keep pushing away. They kept pushing them away. There was this insistence that they be nearby. And then 72 seconds later, they blew the O-ring and we lost the shuttle. But the one Challenger in 2003, this MD, this doctor was out doing, time exposure photography of the trail of Challenger reentering, because it's this brilliant, bright, probably minus 7, minus 8, minus 9 magnitude star as it enters, and so it's beautiful. And then there's this right-angled corkscrew lightning strike that intersects the plume or the spaceship. And after that point in time, the trace or the straight line that represents Challenger is brighter after the impact, or after the point of this squared 90-degree corkscrewed lightning strike hit that mark, hit that plasma. And then she broke up and reentered all the way across the western U.S. So something's up, and we now do not have a manned space program.
Is that picture still available?
I can get it to you. I can get it to you.
Huh. Well, this.
And it's Googleable.
Yeah. Okay. Well, do you have other examples of where some of this exotic technology was used for nefarious purposes that we
Well,
might, know from history, but might not attribute it to this technology?
I think we could look at so many of the major earthquakes out there, especially ones that have occurred at 5, 10, and 35 kilometers in depth. Those are suspect depths
Why is that?
because they happen so regularly, and they're huge events when they do happen. The one in Haiti, the recent one in Chile, Fukushima. Those kind of earth-changing earthquakes, certainly the change the political landscape at that point in time. It's like these countries have been, blackmailed. You will submit, our planes will fly your sky, we will have access to your airspace and the space above that for the execution of this war. And if they don't submit, then they deal with an earthquake, because South America had seen few, if any, of these trails in the sky up until about 2008 and 9. They hadn't been there. And now, after the Chile earthquake and the Haitian earthquake, they're there. And it's funny because these YouTube videos will show up. And obviously, for us that live up here, there's the twin-engine jet. It's the sun is low in the sky. It's at an oblique lay angle, so we know what it looks like. And these are completely unfamiliar sights to these folks. So this is the introduction of these many planes, because the plane count in their sky will go through the roof. Even here in Colorado, pre-storm, I can count maybe 45 planes per hour. When the storm is gone, it may be one or two. The plane counts are that dramatic. And that's something else I want to do with this Real Weather Show, is set up acoustic listening stations where we have quiet locations around this country and see if there isn't a commensurate increase in the number of planes recorded by these microphones ahead of storms versus after. Because we'll be able to ferret out regular aircraft, the regular traffic. We'll be able to see those like clockwork. It'll be the anomalies that will show themselves on an audio trace. We'll be able to see it very, very easily.
Well,
I think, go ahead.
there's a website that you can track any plane flying over anywhere in real time, and you hover over it, and it'll give you the name of the flight and where it's going. Is
Flight
that
Radar 24 and FlightAware,
Yes.
Yeah, there's a couple of them. Yeah.
Now, is that helpful in determining which are normal, sort of commercial, and which are anomalous?
Well, it didn't help the folks looking for Malaysian Airlines Flight 370, did it?
Well, this is basically they're tracking over the continental United States, I think, right?
No, what they're listening to are these planes respond to a ping, and their planes report back their personal information, you know, flight data information, and the airline, and that's it.
Okay.
It is not a radar ping.
All right.
There is no radar leaving from that, from these airports or these radio, or these radio sounds or these... There's nothing hitting those planes. The planes are self-reporting back, so they can be programmed with anything. More times than not, when I take the iPhone out, take the optics to the plane and have a look-see to see if I can match up, it's about 1 in 3 it's right. About 1 in 3. And the number that I've done it is in the few hundred. So that's my sample size.
Right. What is some of the most... sort of striking evidence that you've seen as a professional weatherman, looking at some of these, you know, satellite images that clearly show something that doesn't conform to anything someone might learn about the weather and how the weather has worked. Are there sort of startling examples of what you have seen in these either infrared images or radar images that clearly don't match up with anything that looks natural?
Yeah, this is where if we had a TV show, it would just really, really work. Because then I could go through example after example and show you. But trying to describe is rough, and that's why this real weather show is going to be such a powerful tool, is because I can do just what you've asked. The biggest example is in extratropical cyclones. When we look at, say, the comma shape of a snowstorm. Can you picture that for me?
If a common shape image, of a snowstorm.
Yeah, okay, picture your weatherman. Say he's standing in front of the Plain States, and there's a big blizzard raging across, say, Kansas, Nebraska, Colorado. And it takes the shape of the punctuation mark of a comma. You've got the round top with the little lip at the bottom, with a little curl at the bottom.
Uh-huh.
And so it is this comma shape where you'll find indentations of this resonant geometry. And what you will find are two holes. And these two holes will pop from position to position to position. And the comma head, the top of these storms will bend around or across the tops of these two rotating, what are essentially massive subsidence holes. And once you see that, you're like, that's a sign of the spiral. The earthworm spinning, the spiral of the atmosphere being constrained and forced into a shape by these resonant waves. And a time-lapse imagery just shows it so clearly. If these bloody TV stations would tilt their cameras up instead of looking at the ground and look at the sky, they would see some of this stuff. But that is a big one, that people can go to infrared imagery or even to high-resolution visible imagery and look at thunderstorms. They'll form around holes, deep, strong, powerful subsidence holes, which can be as small as 2, 3, 4 miles across, or in the case of these winter storms, can be 20, 30, or 40 miles in size. And if you're in one of those holes, you're going to hear the planes. You'll see the trails come right across dead center because they have to have these alignments perfect, 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 perfect. So they'll run a trail across, and in the exact center, it will remain illuminated. On the outside, the trail will fade away, but in the exact center of this subsidence hole, the trail will stay bright. So it's a mark. It's a positioning mark. They can get altitude, elevation. You can see how it's moving up or down. And usually, if there are lateral forces on these trails, they'll stay illuminated much, much longer. And you'll see that. If watch the planes as they're leaving the trails, there'll be an indent on the side. You know, like it's pushed east or west or north or south, but either way it's pushed, the trail remains illuminated. So, Rob, there is another force in the atmosphere that they are up there looking for. And it is this etheric field. And this is going to be the huge gains that science makes in this next century. It's as we bring this spirit force, this etheric field, that which animates all, into science.
Well, let's pause it right there after that profound statement. We'll take our quick break. We'll come back with questions for Scott Stevens. His website is weatherwars.info, and that's linked up right now at coasttocoastam.com. Right. Welcome back to Coast AM. We're talking with Scott Stevens about some exotic technology that can literally change the weather. But let's go to the phones. They're literally lighting up like a Christmas tree. We've got the wild card line. Jason, Oahu, Hawaii. Welcome to Coast AM.
Oh, hi, Rob and Scott. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I definitely agree with you about how the Soviet Union started this weather modification warfare program. And like you said, we didn't find out until the 70s or 80s. So I think we obviously built the Harproy in Alaska to catch up for national defense purposes. And so then, you know, when the Soviet Union fell, of course, probably some treaties were made to de-weaponize these arrays. But now look who's in charge of the Russian Federation, Vladimir Putin. And, I mean, it's no secret he's trying to rebuild the Soviet empire. You know, we won't go into details of that, him supporting the Middle East and rockets to fire on Israel, you know. But anyway, so what would, you know, obviously he has the Russian military have control of these arrays that they built in Norway, Siberia, China, and so do you actually, you know, what would actually, do you think he would actually stop back in re-weaponizing those arrays if that is, the theory is true that these are weaponized weather facilities? And then I remember back in Katrina, wasn't it shortly after that we really hastily or really fast built another Harproy in Puerto Rico, I believe, and it seemed we had no hurricanes for a while after that. And then, of course, Sandy came along, and I think that might have been an attempt for us to defend ourselves of, obviously, you know,
yeah, you're Russia making a good point.
Send us these weather, if that is the case. So basically what I'm trying to say is I don't think the U.S. government is in some kind of evil plan to do something detrimental to the Earth. I think it is simply we switched over to studying atmospheric condition with these arrays. But then, of course, when the oligarchs in Russia came to power and secretly were rebuilding the Soviet regime all these years, which no one knew about, and obviously they were weaponizing, I think, wouldn't that be possible why we are seeing all these this activity recently? And I think it's very safer that we, our government, has these as defense, because I don't really don't believe that we are trying to destroy the ozone layer or we would do anything like that. But as far as the Russian Federation, do you really think they would hold back at doing anything?
That's a good question. Let's hear.
There's a couple of ways to approach this. There is the part of government that Eisenhower nearly brought out the Fourth Army from Colorado to retake Area 51 back in the mid-50s. If they're the ones doing it, their agenda is very different than the American government or the Russian Federation. Who's doing it? And that's the real question. Who really holds the purse strings and who is so in bed in this exceedingly off-planetary technology? Who's really got their hands on it? And whoever has the biggest gun, if you will, is the ones that are, that's doing it. And the governments are subjected to this. The peoples are subjected to this. Our U.S. government isn't our U.S. government. It's just not the way it is. At least when it comes to these kind of programs. So then the other thing is, if you want to look at it, if it's the Russians have the big guns and we have little guns, we haven't figured out how to make the big guns, but I don't think that's the case. Then in the case of Sandy, if they were managing the global situation with these very, you know, big, long-frequency waves and able to manage to take us
and make it just enough bigger to fold in a trough, then what are our planes doing there? One's in American airspace. Are they trying to beat it down a little bit, or are they accentuating it, or just simply watching what's happening? And so those are some options.
Okay.
But I tend to think that we're dealing with, well, Terry Cassidy and her Project Camelot, they've had some very interesting revelations. And basically, there is no one in charge of Earth. There are multiple factions fighting for Earth. And that's why there could be collateral damage.
All right. Let's go to Wildcard Line. Joe is in Detroit. You're on with Scott Stevens.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Why are they? What is? I think you kind of answered some of my question, but why? What is their purpose? Why are they doing this to their own people here in the United States?
Well, I don't think we can't personalize this because it's happening to everybody on the planet, and that's one of my irritations with emails that come in is, you know, why are they doing it over me? Well, they're not doing it over you. Because what they're doing over you is going to impact someone hundreds of miles downstream.
Exactly.
Why are they doing it? If these technologies are on board, these aircraft, and they would be stupid not to have it on board. That would be an utter waste of resources and opportunity. That would be a huge opportunity cost not to have the technology on board. So I don't believe you need all of these HAARP-like stations around the country. So many of them could be on the planes. And I see individual thunderstorms with these planes circling them, you know, weaving in and out, going from one storm to the next storm to the next storm. The technology is either on plus or minus. Plus, the rain
right.
is enhanced.
What's the purpose?
Minus, it's not.
What's the purpose? Why?
I think...
The end game.
Well, what we talked about up front was that every dollar that passes through our economy is touched by weather. And I think there is a great agenda... Famine, eventual famine, and it's a reduction of the human race to a much, much smaller population, and there'll be a combination of many other things that will culminate with the soils unable to feed us as a result of the chemical loadings, whether they're from fertilizer or from aircraft, it doesn't matter. It's all falling to the ground.
Well, we've got to go to the west of the Rockies now. Brian in Yuba City, California. You're on with Scott Stevens.
And this is why we need to grow everything in greenhouses, and this should be an imperative for the Department of Agriculture. We need to start growing indoors.
Okay.
All right,
go ahead, Brian. Yeah.
Hey, greetings. I've been doing a lot of research myself, and a while back I came across some snowfall that happened in Georgia that people were putting through a flame, and it was turning black and emitting a smell. Did either of you touch that topic any further, and I'll take that off the air?
Sure. That's easy. Two things would have happened with that snow sample. Had they used different means of melting it, if they had put, you know, a clean pan on the stove and warmed the pan and put the snow in that, they wouldn't have had the black soot. That was from the flame of the lighter. You're burning carbon, and that's what was on the snow. So that way you dirty the sample, trying to melt it with the lighter. You don't dirty the sample if you put it in a clean pan and then warm it on the stove. Two different results. It's just bad science.
You know, and going back to what you said about people growing their own food, it's never been easier. There are these tower gardens that you can get. You can put on a, you know, in the middle of a city. It's really, you know, it's capable. You can have your kale, your lettuce, and this stuff just comes out like crazy. I know people with these little, you know, 4-foot tower gardens, they get more lettuce and kale than they can eat.
This is the future. This is where agriculture is going because of so many things. You know, it's been corporatized. We're being fed certain foods, only certain foods, because, you know, that's what you have to grow to get your seed and so forth.
Yeah, hold it right there. We're coming up to a break, but we've got another half hour of Scott Stevens and his thoughts about this exotic technology and your questions. You're listening to Coast AM, and we'll be back after the break. Stay right there. Yes, welcome back to Coast AM, and what an odyssey of information our guests have given us, Scott Stevens and Dane Wigington. If you missed any of it, I would suggest that you become a Coast Insider. It's just 15 cents a day, but not only do you get your shows from this week, last week, 5 years ago, it gives you access to all kinds of insider communication with George, and you can really, you know, step up your involvement and your feedback. So it's definitely worth it. Check that out at coasttocoastam.com. Just go to the bottom of the page and you'll see there Coast Insider. So we're talking with Scott Stevens, a professional weatherman, about the subject of this manipulation of the weather. And we're getting a very interesting perspective from him, someone who looks at the maps and the radar. And I tell you, I wish more of these meteorologists would come forward and say, hey, we've seen some things that just don't add up. This way we can start putting a more cohesive picture together. So back to your phone calls right after the quick break. Welcome back to Coast AM. And Scott, the nation is anxious to talk to you. You ready for some more questions?
Bring them on.
All right. Well, let's go to the first-time caller line. How about it? We're going to Sacramento. Marie, you're on with Scott Stevens.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I am so glad that you're covering this subject because I had kind of noticed that the weather had been changing, but I always kind of just presumed it was the pollution in the planet just causing changes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the first time I really noticed anything strange happening, like with the clouds, was I was helping my sister homeschool her daughter, who was, I think, about 8 at the time, because we had successfully homeschooled our son, who was already grown. And we were covering the subject of the clouds, you know, the stratus clouds, cumulus clouds. Yeah, things that I remember learning as a little girl, and I remember being able as a child, you know, as a kid, to go out and identify these clouds. So we were going to observe them for the week and keep a notebook on them. And the first day we went out to look at them, she, you know, we were noticing that some of the clouds we just couldn't identify. They were, they didn't look right. They didn't look right.
They're not there.
Yeah, and I didn't really think much of it. I thought, well, maybe, like I was saying before, maybe it has to do with what we're doing to, you know, with all the jets flying through the skies and what we're doing to the air was affecting the clouds, you know, and I, you know, we identified the ones that we could, and the other ones we just kind of were puzzled about. I'm a truck driver now, and I look at, you know, I'm always looking out my window at the sky, and I've continued to notice that clouds didn't look normal anymore. So I'm really glad that now I know what's going on.
Good.
Well, now I know what's going on.
Do you have a question for Scott?
So my question is, now that I know what's going on, what should we be doing? You know, middle-class Americans, okay, we know that, you know, the weather's being changed on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do? Do we contact the leaders of our state, our local government? Do we just inform other people? I mean, what should we be doing to deal with this?
Yeah, how about a game plan? Good question.
There's a couple of things we can do. First of all, because you started with this, go back and just Google new cloud types or new cloud forms. Or new cloud classifications is probably the more accurate search term. And you will see that in the last 20 years, there have probably been 6, 7, 8, and I don't know the number exactly, types of new clouds. You know, these just weren't in the books before. But they have to be there because they're there now. The atmosphere, again, we're talking about the life force. The atmosphere is being stretched and deformed and excited in ways it never has before. And so the clouds are having to contort as the visible expression of the etheric aspect of this atmosphere. The clouds are that visible expression. And this is why there's so many powders and those traces in the sky, because it allows that energy, that aspect of it, those resonances that are there to be made visible. And so the trails are really important in illuminating those so I can see them. And if I can see them, then I can share them.
Hmm.
And so can you, and so can others. And this is why if we can get this discourse to happen nationally, and this is why I'm going to do that Real Weather Show. And the realweathershow.com is where it's going to be beginning, and I've just launched this Indiegogo crowdfunding thing so we can show this, and the truck drivers can send their pictures and we can explain it. And I'm going to do this in the format of a regular newscast so it's easy for the everyday person to digest. And for other newsmen, other weathermen, other investigative reporters or other meteorologists at national research centers to say, hey, I hadn't connected these two things together. And so this is something I've turning my two-car garage into a studio. And with that studio, we're going to set up the cameras. I've got a photographer. It's actually going to be about a five-person gig.
Wow.
It's got to be, because I've got terabytes of time-lapse imagery. I've got terabytes of stuff. Mm. And there are thousands of people out there that have things to share.
Of course, it wouldn't hurt for people to get in touch with their local representatives, too, right?
No, it wouldn't. Yeah. But it's all about education at this point in the game. Yeah. We've been told, you know, global warming, climate change, whatever. It is this technology that's doing it.
Yeah.
And we've lost the baseline of where this planet really is. And so we really don't know if she's warming or if she's cooling because we're messing with the patients.
Mm.
What we do know is that the sun is simmering down. And that always leads to cooler temperatures on planet Earth.
Okay, I think we might have kind of an insider whistleblower, wildcard line. Aaliyah, from an undisclosed location?
Hello, my name is Ilya Abramov. I don't quite have a question for you, sir, but more along the lines of basic information, what was going on in the Soviet Union as far as weather changing patterns in the late 80s.
Okay.
Interested.
The goals we... I worked in Krovolets. It's an area in Ukraine, and I worked in a particular facility called Stovolt. I worked for a group called Atmosphere Noye Neblostye Nidishtoye Voskoye. It translates roughly to Atmosphere Temperament and Observatory Station.
Mm.
We worked with sister groups in Volgada, it's northern Russia, in Kroyetvetsia, which is far past St. Petersburg. We watched their work mainly in the early 80s. They were attempting very early on to reroute northern Russian weather towards the west, Western European countries. Mm-hmm. Our colder winters, we believed, would be easier to move with artificial cold fronts towards Western Germany, towards Denmark, England. Back towards the west, yes.
Yes.
We attempted to use multiple means of doing this, many of which were not very successful or showed very little promise. Almost every attempt would give us some kind of type of cloud result, I believe is the word I'm looking for. We would see on radar different shaped clouds, very abnormal, not what you would most normally see, very, very bulky, oversized, very clear fronts. You could look into the sky and see very, very clear waves, very evident that it was not natural. It was very, very rare, though, that we would get any motion. Most of the time, it would just result in downpour or quick blizzard in areas north. Over time, they moved process to us in Stavelt, and we attempted in Ukraine to move weather westward. We ourselves used different means. We attempted to go back to using more conventional ways. We sent planes into skies and attempted to seed clouds with different materials to yield heavy rains or heavy snow, dried ice in very large quantities. We would send up Antonov AN-26, large plane, very big, hundreds of pounds of dry ice, thousands. So over time, we would drop it into clouds. It would create terrible, terrible snow. Stovolt was under feet meters, not enough snow to go out. It was during 87, it was so thick you could drown in the snow. It was terrible. And we never got any motion out of it, though. We were unsuccessful almost every single time. Eventually, our research was shut down, and it was all moved back into Russia. And I was sent back into Borovichi, which is where we were retaining all this information, where we were keeping most of this. And we worked with a Komsomol organization, similar to KGB. They were headed by Vladimir Markol. He led the organization, and we were to look at all the information that we had gathered and send it instead to East, where they would work in a better location for this type of work, away from prying eyes of people. And this is where I believe more of the events that you speak of with weather control and changing, what you might know more of about. I personally was dismissed after our work with Komsomol, but you seem to know more about what we might have been doing in East.
Well, you've made something clear for me. Because in the time-lapse imagery, when the rain begins, the bottoms of the clouds begin to pull in a different direction than the rest of the storm. When the bottoms begin to move, it's like they're drawn in another direction. And from that, the cloud piles up on this contrary or opposing moving bottom of a cell. And so what you've said is that you couldn't get motion. But if these established resonance patterns could be established in the sky, then our guys can use the planes with the etheric, the orgone, to do those pulls at the bottom of the storms, because all the moisture of the atmosphere is going to roll through these patterns then. Interesting. I'd like to talk with you in depth.
And right now?
Well, you can contact Scott Stevens through his website, weatherwars.info.
All right.
Well, I just wasn't sure where we were on the time for the show.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, yeah. I can continue to talk about what I know about what happened east.
No,
go
for it. I'm interested.
Yeah. Ilya, do you have anything else you'd like to share?
Yeah. Just general speaking, after Komsomol took our work away from us and moved east, I stayed on for about another 4 months. I believe, before I was finally terminated and sent back home to Ukraine to work on other work. They adapted Yakolev yak plants, and they eventually were used to monitor storm and attempt to... I do not know the technology that was behind it, because it was our sister groups in Russia were the ones who developed it, not us in Ukraine. They believed that in East, with enough Yakolev planes, they could redirect the storms. It might be similar to what you're talking about now. It might not be. It might not have even worked. I am unsure if we ever yielded any results. Mm. I wasn't around long enough to see any of these results.
But that's what they were thinking, is they had a technology that was mobile enough that they, if they, in numbers, they could do it.
They believed so. They used ground and air, Kristof ground-to-air surveillance, were vehicles that I saw quite a bit of. They looked tracked satellites almost that moved around with storms, and they had receivers on the Yakolovs. And before I had left, I had seen quite a few of them in motion. They seemed very confident that they could track the area between the plane and storm and find ways to redirect, at least by dropping things into the clouds and redirecting somehow the cold fronts. As before, as we were attempting to do back in Stevolp.
Yeah. Well, Ilya, thank you so much for sharing some of that. And it gives us an idea of, you know, where things were going back then.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much.
Fantastic. All right. Let's go to Wildcard Line.
Rob, this is the whole point of doing these things.
Yeah.
Because as we talk and as we share our experiences, I personally can provide cover for others to come in.
That's what it's all about. Getting
what they know.
Yeah, getting people to come out from the woodwork, putting this out and saying, look, this is here. This is real. Now let's get on with it. And let's, start actually, bringing this to the table. That's the whole reason.
Because we can deal away with droughts. We don't have to deal with hurricanes. yes, there's an energy exchange and a thermal exchange that has to happen on this planet, but it doesn't have to happen in the way that it is. Mm. And that could be changed.
Right.
We have the technology yesterday to do it.
Mm. All right. Oh, now, Wild Caroline, now from Manchester, New Hampshire, you're on with Scott Stevens.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's kind of an open question, comment, real quick. What if, on top of everything else, that the powers to be are trying to terraform this planet? And I will take your comments off the air.
Thank you. Great question.
I don't think they'll get away with it. I don't think they'll get away with it. I think that there are forces that are good that are far, far greater. And if those can be brought to bear on this, then it will be so. But it takes you and me and all of those that care for this planet to care for ourselves and for our children and the next generations to follow to do something about it. And then they can't get away with it. It is awareness, 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 and that changes everything.
Mm. Is it possible, do you think, with any or all of this technology to, as she suggested, terraform the planet,
sure,
turn it into something that it was maybe, you know, 100,000 years ago?
Or 100 million years ago.
Right.
But the thing is, time is always moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot go back and recreate the past.
Hmm.
It can't happen.
Okay.
We're in a different place in space. And so we can't duplicate what was. We can try, but they'll fall on their face. And in a way, it's already underway. It's already underway. And it can be that the sun is already foretelling of a much, much bigger change. And what's happening in the sky is simply a delaying of a massive change in our climate system. That has to be considered as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because the sun is simmering down, and we're at the end of a very long cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to be on the table for one who is to remain open-minded. That has to be an option. But terraforming, we could do it.
Really?
We can do it.
Hmm.
Yeah, we can. It's being done in a way. What is happening into the forests in the West is already a form of terraforming. I mean, one fire, and those forests from New Mexico to Idaho, Calgary, Alberta, Northwest Territories is already on fire.
Mm, okay.
And so in a way, it's already happening. And you've got radiation in the Pacific. How is that not terraforming? Because things will evolve one way or another from that event.
Right. Let's see if we can sneak one quick one in. Jeff, Springdale, Utah, do you have a really quick question?
Yes. About the South Atlantic anomaly, the hole in the magnetic field that has grown, and they've applied a new terminology called the Super South Atlantic Anomaly.
Uh-huh.
Do you know anything about that in regards to possibly the chemtrails could be trying to patch the magnetic field to keep solar radiation?
Hmm.
And I just wanted to say the other thing is amazing to me as the phenomenon itself is the lack of people who are aware of it with all the evidence on the internet, and all you have to do is look up. I think it's amazing that people are still unaware of this, and it makes me wonder if it actually hasn't started to affect us mentally.
Mm. Okay, thanks, Jeff. Really quick, just a nutshell answer.
Well, it's already been affecting us. Dane ended that with the 1 in 3 dying with Alzheimer's or dementia in some form. It is already affecting us.
Mm.
The anomalies, again, I have to go back to the sun. It's back to the sun. And the sun is the power source for this solar system of which we are a part.
Mm-hmm.
Third planet out. As it changes, so will we.
Okay. Well, we'll have to leave it there because we're just about out of time. But tell people where they can find you.
Weatherwars.info, but find me on Indiegogo.com with The Real Weather Show. And from that, I'll take our vast library and give you a proper geoengineering slanted or shown weather show.
Cool. Thank you so much, Scott.
Gotcha.
Scott Stevens. And that is going to have to wrap it up. Thanks to Dane Wigington and everyone who made the show possible, and especially you for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Coast to Coast AM.